Today we want to talk a little bit about, I said yesterday that we would like to get into, I would like to get into discussing a little bit today, a little further about roles for older people in our society. So much of what I've been reading about growing old in our society indicates that society tends to relegate older people to a kind of retired status where they no longer have a meaningful role in society. Now, as I said earlier, I don't think that necessarily is true of this group, or at least some of the people in this group, because I think that people who come to Holden Village tend to probably be a little more able to carry on certain kinds of things financially, intellectually, culturally, and the like. So I don't think we're entirely a typical group of people, as we had said before. But nonetheless, I'm sure all of us have either observed or are involved in the process of pulling away from society, from the meaningful roles in society. Some of us have been extremely active during the time of our working life. During the time that I was carrying on my career, I was extremely busy. I was a parish pastor in two large churches. I was an executive of a social welfare agency, and then I was a national executive for the American Lutheran Church. And in the last 15 years, I was flying all over the country. I was operating budgets of several million dollars and so on. And then suddenly comes the time when you retire, and all of those roles are essentially just chopped off. Just chopped off. I could no longer fly around the country as I've been doing in the last years of my work at the national offices. I think one of those years I was flying someplace on 96 different days, which, you know, about once every 3 days flying around the country someplace. No more of that. Suddenly I wasn't flying anyplace. I used to have a card for the United Airlines Club, you know, in O'Hare Airport and LaGuardia Airport and one thing and another. All of a sudden when I left, that was taken away, and I couldn't any longer enjoy that kind of thing. I couldn't any longer enjoy traveling on an expense account. Not that in the church we had such an affluent expense account, but nonetheless, it was at least an ego boost to be able to go in and present certain kinds of credit cards and things like that and have things arranged for you. All of a sudden, those kinds of roles are cut off, and then the meaningful involvement in work, the kinds of things that I was doing, the involvement with committees, with boards, with budgets, with projections for the future, with planning for the institution, for the agency, with making speeches and all of that kind of thing, that suddenly becomes just chopped off. It comes to an end, and I think then comes the crunch for many older people of finding beyond that a meaningful role. When you have energy, when you believe you have at least some mental competence left, and when you have a need to be needed, a need to be involved in the affairs of society, and that's chopped off, then I think many older people get into trouble. Now, I haven't seen a great deal done in terms of thinking about newer roles for older people. We talked a little bit yesterday or the day before about second careers. I think that's a significant thing that we need to be thinking about. But I'd like to enlist your discussion today and some of your experiences for the benefit of all of us, and particularly for the benefit of those planning processes in the church and in the community, around the subject of roles for older people, significant roles for older people in our society. What kinds of things are there for older people that are of significance and meaning? What kinds of things can we generate? What kinds of things can we suggest that the institutions in society generate? Our government, our governmental agencies, our churches, our community organizations, and the like. How do we assure that in the future older people will retain a meaningful role in society? One of the sessions we had early in the week was on the fact that there are a great many more of us, a great many more old people, older people in society. As that goes on, it's going to be more and more essential in the future that there be meaningful roles for older people, not only for the benefit of older people, but for the benefit of society and the community itself. So I'd like to elicit some comments and suggestions and ideas that you people have. What's happened to you? How do you feel about new roles or different roles or the role of old people in society? What would you envision for the future? Let's just open it up for some thoughts and ideas that you may have.
I think because we are affected by the media and that we need to have presented more different role models of what an old person is like and looks like and acts like and how they move and instead of these old stereotypes.
You don't think the media has been very good to older people?
Well, they're getting better, but I saw a poster with showed a grandma in a rocking chair.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that one had gone out.
But there are a lot of grandmas in rocking chairs.
Well, but not, sure.
Is that a negative stereotype? Do you think that's a negative stereotype?
It's so flat in a little box, you mm-hmm. know, that...
Whistler's mother type of thing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Okay.
We do have a very good role model. It's the President Reagan. You know, he can prove that at his age, and he can be the president of this country, one of the most important, I mean, it is the
yeah.
most important...
Okay, there is a very significant role model,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, that means if he can do, anybody could do anything.
The Supreme Court also.
Yeah, well, I guess yes and no. I've read a lot of differences of opinion about the Supreme Court being as old as it is. I mean, a lot of people think that some of the Supreme Court members are just hanging on for political reasons or for ego trip reasons or whatever. But nonetheless, this is true. This is. The Supreme Court is probably the most significant, or one of the most significant institutions in our society. And the average, I don't know what the average age is, but the several of the Supreme Court members are quite elderly and are not in extremely good health, but are functioning apparently very well. I wanted to pursue this image business just a little further. Did any of you see the movie Cocoon?
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I thought it was great because they were free to do what they really wished and they took their own risks, but they did.
Okay.
Very, very much.
Anybody else see the movie? I'd recommend that you see that, you know. You get some images. You were talking about the image of old people and the media. I have some mixed feelings about that movie, and of course, some of it doesn't really make sense.
Right.
It's a fantasy in many ways. But it treats old people with dignity and respect. I really think that there's a well done movie with top notch actors and actresses who just...
Don Ameche's even our age, I mean, my age. Not your age, but my age.
Well, he's in his 70s.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And, well, they were all in their 70s.
Right. And men, too.
Pardon?
And men, too. I think that's important because not as many men live to be that age, or older. You know.
Right.
I mean, there are more women that live to be older.
I think that older people in that movie were treated with dignity and respect.
Right.
And even though it's a fantasy, it does, the image in the media there is a positive image, I think.
There is some changes then that are going on. It's getting better.
I don't know. I can't say that. I don't.
It's a growth process. I think it's gradually changing.
Right. You were going to say something else?
I can see the field of volunteering continuing with older people. I am in the position of placing my mother in a nursing home. And I have found a place that is delightful for her. And there is a man there that is 77. He volunteers every single day. He has for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
He does not drive because of a heart attack, and he goes by bus. He is one of the most beautiful people I have ever met. And the attitude in this women's residence is for a holistic picture of the person that's there. And this is where I choose to volunteer. And the thing that is so neat about this place is there are infant daycare center there. And there is one woman who brings her dog, her cat, and her baby every day to work. And the dog gets jealous when you play with the babies too much.
Okay. She suggests volunteering. All right. Does anyone else in the group here involve himself or herself in a volunteer kind of situation?
I sure do.
We all do.
I do. And one thing with volunteering is that you have to be careful because you can get yourself too involved. That's what I found after retirement.
Okay. What do you mean too involved?
Well, you know, say you start volunteering for the botanical gardens and you do volunteer work at church and you're just going.
Too many things.
It's just too much. And that is something that a person has to be careful of too.
Yeah, and of course you have to learn to say no.
That's the big.
But I think that's one of the pleasures of getting older is being able to say no.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was carrying out my work, my career, I rarely could say no because almost everything that came up, was necessary that I pay attention to it. And now, one of the great pleasures of growing older is that sure I can volunteer and I can there's plenty of things to do, but I can say no.
But the setup with a lot of volunteers is that you are to come that day every week, you know, or 2 days every week, and that type of thing. And so that again sometimes takes some of the freedom away that you maybe been looking for.
You wait all your working years to get some freedom to do the things you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you volunteer, you have to adhere to a strict timing.
Right.
And then there are all of these sales and everything, you know.
But if that's your choice.
I know. But you find out what the goal is with volunteering.
Oh, absolutely.
After you get
don't
into
volunteer
it.
Unless you know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You get so involved you can't do the things you were looking forward to doing when you retire.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another type of volunteering that is in dire need but takes practically no preparation or training is just to be a visitor, such as the veterans hospitals and the retirement homes and things like that. They just beg satisfying to just go and sit
and you do that when you want to usually.
Right.
Because it's a one-to-one.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then I, a as long as I'm speaking now, I'd like to mention sort of the volunteering in reverse and about the importance of older people. And a thought just occurred to me a moment ago, and if I don't speak, then I lose it. But my thought, but I was in the Philippines, as many of you know, last winter, and I visited a volunteer in her 60s, later 60s, volunteered from the Sacred Heart Hospital to go in the Peace Corps, and also with another family from Eugene, Stevens. And I saw her in Catabalog in Samar, and out of the 26 volunteers that went from the States in her group there, nine of them quit, and all nine of them were young people. In other words, the ones in the 60s and 70s are sticking it up.
That's the way we were taught, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
You start something.
That's right.
Do you think that there ought to be more agencies in our culture and in our society that reach out to make use of volunteers, to train volunteers, and to set up criteria for their services and so on? I know that a number of the agencies that I dealt with when I was working for the church and was supervising about 150 agencies and institutions all around the country, nursing homes and children's institutions, work with the deaf and the blind and the like. We were always talking about using volunteers, but we never really got around to it. And we'd sometimes ask for volunteers, but I don't think we ever really defined what a volunteer was, and we didn't define any training, good training programs for our volunteers, nor did we try to ascertain what kinds of things volunteers can do best and what needs to be done best by professional people, nor did we really provide adequate supervision for our volunteers. So as I look back on the agencies of the church that I had to do with, I think most of them were not very successful in eliciting the help of volunteers, but I think it was our own fault. I don't think it was that there weren't people out there who were capable and who were willing and who would like to have invested themselves in some of the things that we were doing. I think it was probably our own fault that we just didn't pay enough attention to what's necessary in order to make a volunteer program successful.
One of the things that's working out very well in our church is the Stevens Ministry, mm-hmm. which is a two-year commitment, mm-hmm. and there's regular training with it, and it is just working out beautifully.
You want to say what a Stevens Ministry is? I don't think everybody knows what that is.
Stevens Ministry is where people come and you are told that we are all ministers. And you know, in large congregations, it's just impossible for the two or three ministers that you have to make all of these calls. And so in Stevens Ministry, these people are trained on how to visit the sick and how to talk to someone who is going through a divorce and that type of thing. And then they take on one or two persons as the person that they will work with directly. And it is just absolutely working out so well in our church.
Is there some supervision provided?
Yes, they meet every 2 weeks.
They meet every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And to discuss what they're doing?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And talk, discuss, and then ask for prayers and encouragement, because they too need strengthening, because it's a big, it's a ministry.
Okay.
I think that's an example of there being a reward for this status of a volunteer. But so often, the status of a volunteer is like a second class citizen, or there's enough of a reward system in it.
Okay.
And infer something lesser than. And in this case, in your example, there's like
perhaps an inner reward and a better status associated with it.
In other words, if people are going to do a significant job as a volunteer or as an older person wanting to invest him or herself in something, that there needs to be some according of recognition and so on. This is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, the reward has to be there in some way or another. Okay.
I think a lot of people should also use their skills to teach. My husband, he had to take the early retirement 3 years ago because of a back problem. And he said, I cannot just sit here, you know, I'm going to go crazy. And he started teaching. And that was very successful.
But who does he teach?
Oh, who? Well, he was teaching. You see, he has several things that he can teach. That's
I see.
What he is. He taught German, he taught computer programs,
uh-huh.
And he also taught music.
Uh-huh.
And so he just went to schools, offered himself, and he formed groups and gave classes.
Okay.
And the classes are very...
Okay, for some people who have certain skills like that, that might be a viable thing.
But I'm sure that a lot of people can do the same thing. Or anything like if you are an accountant and you are retired, you can teach or do smaller jobs
mm-hmm. okay.
to keep yourself busy, because that's the key. You have to keep yourself busy.
Speaking of accountants, I know of one church where... there are a couple of accountants, it's a large church, who offer services to people of low income who need help with their income tax. And it's a very significant kind of volunteer work, because a lot of people with medium or low income are not able to hire the kind of help they need to get the best advantage of income tax things and so on. Yeah.
I was going to say, well, I'm a nurse, but you can't go to a hospital and volunteer, or a nursing home. They'll say, oh, but our insurance won't cover you. So they don't want your professional skills unless you can be covered by insurance.
That's a problem.
But we go to Mexico or the Philippines, and they don't even ask to see your license. They say, helpless.
Okay.
So you're limited somehow.
Another form of volunteering that I sort of covered in the first campground holds in our national parks and state parks, and such as this winter we experienced Easter in Oregon Pike National Monument, and one of the volunteers was a Baptist minister, retired Baptist minister. We had one of the most beautiful, and that was suggested by a Lutheran worker,
young girl
from Colorado. And the sunrise service among the saguaro cactus, and all the beautiful service it was. So there's another avenue that's open.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
We have in our church, we call a neighborhood ministry. Well, that's more or less where people help one another in the neighborhood. And like I have my name in there, and I could just be working all the time. Like it might be a mother has to go to the hospital to have a baby to stay for a couple days, or somebody's going on a trip and I've house sat and I've babysat, and just all different kinds of things. And part of that is, you know, in the ministry, caring for one another. But also if you're healthy and capable, you get paid for that a lot of times too.
Okay, very good. Let's move to a different aspect, and I'd like to raise a question with you about continuing education for older persons. Now, I know there are a variety of possibilities in this, but I'd like to explore with you for a few minutes the possibilities of education for a variety of reasons, for personal satisfaction, for developing new skills, for developing better understanding of what's happening in our society, and so on. How many of you have ever participated in an elder hostel? Do you know what elder hostel is?
Yes, yes.
Elder hostel is, my wife and I have been in two elder hostels, and we're now going to go to a third one a week after we leave Holden here. And I'm fascinated with a thing like elder hostel. It's an opportunity for older people to take part in an educational adventure, almost always on university or college campuses, taught by professors or competent teachers, professionals, in a whole wide variety of educational opportunities, ranging from art to computers to music to outdoor activities to literature to language, learning languages, etc., etc. And I think the elder hostel movement is just an excellent movement in the education or the re-education or new opportunities for education for older persons.
Can most people afford it?
Well, I don't know. You don't have to travel a great deal of distance to go to an elder hostel. I know in Wisconsin, where we come from, there are eight university campuses of the University of Wisconsin scattered around the state, and they all have elder hostels. And then there are a dozen private colleges in the state that have elder hostels of various kinds. So I'd say there are 20 to 30 opportunities in Wisconsin and various places around the state. So travel is not a big factor. This year, the tuition, which is room and board and instruction, is $190, basically, all around the country.
For how long?
A week.
A week. For person.
Per person.
Now that's your room and all your meals, and then all the incidental transportation that takes place. Last year, my wife and I went to an elder hostel up in northern Wisconsin, an environmental elder hostel. And every day, they took us in the bus someplace. We visited a national forest, we visited some bogs and studied the environment and that kind of thing, and so on. We went to commercial cranberry bogs and so on, but that was all included in the tuition. So a couple would be about $380 for the week. Now, you know, whether people can afford that, I don't know. It's a fair amount of money.
Up here, Paul.
Yeah.
If you happen to live in a town where there is a university offering elder hostel, you might investigate whether they need hosts or hostesses in the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
In our town of Arcata, where we have Humboldt State University, they will give you your tuition free if you'll serve as a host or hostess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In our state, in Wisconsin, there's a series. There are in many of the smaller communities. There's a Bremer Bank. There's a Bremer Foundation that operates banks in Wisconsin, and the Bremer Foundation offers scholarships to older people in Wisconsin of $145 per person. And the tuition is $190. Now my wife and I are going to go to an elder hostel a week after next, and we're each going to get $145 to scholarship on $190 tuition. So the whole week is going to cost us $45. Elder hostel also nationally has a scholarship program, for which people who feel they cannot afford it, can apply. Now, obviously, everybody isn't going to be able to get a scholarship, but nonetheless, they try hard to make it financially feasible.
Arizona, they have all kinds of classes you can take, but it's on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the charge of maybe $10 or $20 or $30 for the course.
You mean at the university?
If you had anything from playing cards to accounting or almost you name it, and it's quite a language, it's various, many different kind of language, speaking languages, and what they call it, or speaking Spanish, you know, and then a regular Spanish and follow-up courses. But you have to really get signed up quite ahead because it's so popular, but the cost is so little.
It's through the university or the school
system? Pima College, part of the
Pardon?
It's the Pima College there in Tucson.
Oh. That's a community college. The one through the university is quite expensive.
Now, we were in one in Arizona, down in Douglas, Arizona, at Cochise Community College down there. And I think they have similar kinds of things down there.
Well, the big, a lot of universities, like in Minneapolis and St. Louis, both, they have what they call extension classes, and they have special rates for senior citizens, and some of those are just once a week for 2 or 3 weeks. I've gone to many of them, cooking and candy and everything from cleaning, new methods in to sharpen your labor. They just have, like he said, and most of the big cities have these.
Okay.
And they're very inexpensive.
Yeah. Anybody else know of other educational opportunities for older people? Yeah.
You might want to continue your profession, at least keep up to date with it, but not necessarily practice it. Whether you're a teacher, a nurse, or who else needs to have these continuing education credits.
Okay.
She's up there again.
The use of a university. There are always these other types of courses, such as wife and I took course once a week for about 8 weeks on modern China. Mm-hmm. We missed modern Russia simply because we didn't have time to go. We had too many other things on. But we're going to be out of town. But that sort of thing is often available if you kind of keep an eye out on the agendas that they put out.
Okay.
I think it's true in the California State University system. If you are over 60, you can take any of the regular courses for only $3, where the kids are paying $100 and more. You can enroll in any of the regular courses for only $3 if you're over 60.
I have talked to a number of older people who are reluctant to avail themselves of these opportunities because they feel that it's been so long since they've been in school, or they are a little worried about being on a campus where there are a lot of young people and so on. I think that's pretty unwarranted. In talking with people who have gone to elder hostels, I have found that older people take to education like a duck to water, and it really has been a very satisfying thing. Yeah.
You don't have to take a test either.
No.
That's true.
That's right. You don't have to take tests. That's the great part. You don't have to prove that you learned something.
Yeah, they did. They're good for nothing.
Okay. All right, I'd like to add one other dimension to, I think it's new roles, right? It comes under this whole aspect of new role. One of the things that happens to us as we move into the area of retirement or older age is that we're suddenly confronted with new roles between husband and wife, between spouses. Let me give you a few. Well, you know what I'm talking about. If you have retired or if your status has changed, let me give you a few illustrations from our life. I used to travel a great deal, and I was very, very busy with meetings and busy in the evening and one thing or another, so I really wasn't home a lot. And so we had built our life kind of around that sort of a lifestyle. And Corolla had her way of doing things, and I had mine, and of course we got together quite frequently, but nonetheless, I had a career, and she had a career, and the kids were there. And then, after I left the national offices, we went out on the road together and did some workshops and speaking for several years. And suddenly we were thrust together 24 hours a day. And it was an entirely different kind of a relationship and a different kind of role. I think every person who comes to the point of retirement and comes to the point of a change in lifestyle when you get older has to face new relationships between husband and wife, new spouse relationships. A lot of interesting things come out of that. For one thing, we learn to talk to each other much more effectively and frequently than we ever used to. A lot of other interesting little things. For example, I've learned to cook. This has become one of the most satisfying things I ever did. I don't mean just satisfying to my stomach, but I really enjoy cooking. I think that's a wonderful thing. And Coral has helped me learn how to cook, and it's relieved her of some burdens in one thing and another. I think it's been just really a very significant thing. But nonetheless, we're all aware of the fact, I'm sure, that retirement probably requires some reassessing of our lifestyle in relation to husband and wife, or in the relationship between spouses. Anybody like to comment on that?
I've heard it said, one woman said that her husband had retired and just about drove her up the wall when she was in the house all the time. She couldn't even go to the grocery store by herself, you know, it takes long.
Okay.
I think it's good if they each have some separate activity. Then you don't have complete togetherness. Okay. And it helps.
Yeah. You don't think complete togetherness is good?
Well, it is for us, but a lot of people don't feel that way.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, I think that when two people have spend a lifetime developing certain habits and certain ways of doing and so on, that it is a strain to change those and to form an entirely different and new kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. It certainly is.
And along the same line, I think it helped with us, my retirement, that she said my wife has kept her volunteer projects. So she goes on about those, and she will do those things, whereas I have my own projects, so that we are separated. The other thing that helped me a great deal, I believe, having been retired that long, I might find myself mistaken, was that I was fortunate enough to be able to taper off. I didn't go full bore one day and thrown out of the office the next day. I was able to work 30% for 1 year and 10% for another year, but I could put that, not spread it out, but concentrated in as far as time was concerned.
Okay. Any other comments now on roles for older people? Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, you know, the unemployment is about 10% in this country.
Yeah.
And senior citizens, they don't interfere there, you know, part of that, so that.
You don't think senior citizens
don't have anything to do with that anyway, so that, I mean, they don't interfere with it, with that.
If they're retired, you
mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Retired people, you know, uh-huh. I mean, the unemployment is like over 10% of this country.
Of course, there are people who complain that older people who continue working after 65 take jobs that should go to younger people. That's not what you really had in mind, is it?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Along that line, though, there is one thing that people, when you hear that, oh, we've got more clout, let's get legislation for this and that and the other thing. But what is a frightening thing is the large amount of older people compared to the working man that's left, what he has to contribute to the Social Security system to try to keep the older ones going is liable to break the system where they just no longer can afford it, because when a single man has to pay 12% of his income towards Social Security, you know, a working, you know, they even talked about going, they changed it. At first it was, well, they had to pay 14, but now I think they backed down to 12. Because where you're self-employed, why, that's a terrific, terrific tax to have to pay in.
Yeah. We were talking, I think those of you who were here earlier in the week remember that we were discussing that when we talked about the fact that there are more and more older people in society. And we didn't come to any conclusions about what ought to be done, but we did come to the conclusion that older people need to begin to think about their responsibilities toward the systems that we have in this country.
I disagree with some of the things that ARP has proposed, and I always was in favor of the senior citizen could get along without the cost to raise. Because when we went in Social Security, we went in with expecting what we paid in on, that's what we're going to get back. But now when you get back more, in 3 years, and what you paid in all your lifetime, that system cannot survive that way. So the senior citizens do not want to get greedy.
Well, I think they don't realize that Social Security is not supposed to support them.
Yes,
it's a supplement to their income.
Right.
Only.
It's supposed to be that way.
Yes, it's supposed to be,
but it frequently isn't viewed that way.
Right.
Yeah, right.
This is what they forget.
Okay. All right, one more thought on roles for older people. I think we tend to be pushing, and I have tried to do that during this week too, on the importance of older people being involved in significant kinds of things and so on. I'd like to wind up by making a point that I have found in my own life, and I know my wife has, and I'm sure most of you have too, that there's nothing wrong with having a great time with hobbies and outlets and things like that.
That's what I was
going to say. I think that many of us who are older people can find great significance in some of the kinds of things that we do that might be classified as hobbies or outlets, for instance. I for example, have a wood shop in my garage. I insulated it so I can work out there in these cold Wisconsin winters. And I've got a kerosene heater, and I can go out there, and I can make picture frames, and I can redo furniture, and I can build various kinds of things and putter around out there. I get a great deal of deep satisfaction out of being able to do that kind of thing. Carola is a weaver. She weaves all kinds of things, placemats and this and that and the other thing, and. She makes straw figures and so on. These certainly are in the area of hobbies. And I don't think anybody should put down older people who develop skills in hobbies. I think these are important factors in the life of all of us.
Yeah. Report to carpentry shop at 8:30 in the morning.
I just hurt my arm and I can't.
We got left handed neighbor.
I think another thing is very, very important is to keep you healthy, is you have to keep physically active.
Okay.
And a good walk every single day or twice a day. Push yourself, it doesn't matter.
6 in the morning?
Tomorrow morning, let's go.
Sure.
All right. That is a role for older people.
It is very important. And also, a lot of people, when they get old, they don't eat the right thing. And that's wrong, too. You need your nourishment.
Okay.
You can eat less, lighter things, less red meat, but you can, like, for instance, what we eat here at home is an excellent,
It isn't too many years ago, I think, that older people were viewed as being on the downside of life and that were not expected to involve themselves in much physical activity and physical skills and that kind of thing. And I think that era is passing very rapidly. I was able to walk up to Hart Lake and back today, and I'm 70 years old, and I really didn't think very much of it. And, I think when I was younger, if I had thought that a 70-year-old person could undertake that climb up the mountain and back, I wouldn't have thought it possible. And my perception things has changed. And I think that's a very important point.
I read an article in Reader's Digest some time ago, maybe some of you read it, How to Keep Yourself Happy, and there were six things to do every day. And it reminded me, because one was to do something physical, for your physical exercise, something mental, and a prayer of thanks to God, and then do something for yourself, do something for someone else, and then do some little job that needs to be done that you don't want to do.
That's right. There's plenty of those.
That's pretty good. I try to follow that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I do think that the older people are so much more aware of the importance of good diet and exercise,
yeah,
and how they can help,
right,
themselves.
Okay.
Just
very good. Yeah.
I don't know how you can let the older people know this, but there are so many services and healthcare agencies, for instance, that are available that if they just knew where to look for whatever they need. Of course, I come from a metropolitan area where all these things are available, but
sure,
it's a spin-off, too, into local communities. It's just unbelievable what's available for people for health support.
Yes, yes. If you're able to avail yourself.
Right.
The trouble is that a great many older people do not know or do not avail themselves of all those resources.
One thing, this residence where I expect to place my mother, is they have a new program. A pastor is setting up a training session where, I don't know how many, but two or three will go out into the community and speak to families and those who have older people that are ready for placement and let them know what is available. So it isn't such a big thing when I can't get through.
What state are you talking about?
Minneapolis.
Oh,
Minnesota.
Minnesota
sounds like it does a lot. California does so much for the elderly too, much more than Arizona.
Have you thought anything about it being a time of life when there's a deepening spirituality? A person is in a stage of life where they have learned a lot and they are, or should be, more aware of the meaning of life and be more sensitive to what God has given us and is all around us and in people. And there's so much rich, that's the rich part of being older.
The Tournier, who writes this book, I've referred to this book several times during this week. It's called Learning to Grow Old by Paul Tournier. He's a psychiatrist and medical doctor, and he has a great deal to say.
I read that book. Mm-hmm.
Have you got that book, or have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
He has a great deal to say about the spiritual values of older age and the importance of prayer, meditation, thinking about the meaning of life, and so on.
Mm-hmm. So it brings a balance of thinking that we must keep doing things, we must keep acting, keep doing, but we also, it's like the root, the tree, the root, the branches keep growing,
yeah,
but the roots keep deepening too.
Okay, thank you. It's almost time to close, and I'd like to elicit any closing thoughts that any of you have. Some of you have been here throughout the week, some of you are new, but we've come to the end of this week now, and I want to say to you, those of you particularly who have been here through the week, that I have enjoyed very much going through this discussion with you, and I've learned a great deal. It's been very, very helpful to me. I thank you.